If we could turn in our Bibles back to Ephesians chapter 6, Ephesians and chapter 6, we will read from verse 1 to verse 4, biblical leadership in the home, and this time not so much between a husband and his wife, but between parents and their children. Ephesians 6, verse 1 to verse 4. Children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. Honor your father and mother. This is the first commandment with a promise, that it may go well with you, and that you may live long in the land. Fathers, do not provoke your children to anger, but bring them up in the discipline and instruction of the Lord. Well, brethren, one of the most awesome responsibilities given to us as human beings on this planet is that of preparing an immortal soul, not only for responsibility here on earth, but also to meet that person's maker on the judgment day, and consequently either spend eternity in a place of punishment or spend eternity in a place of bliss. When we have little babies born in our homes, there's a lot of excitement, especially if all the children are still very young. But every so often you will have an individual who comes to visit to celebrate with you the birth of this little baby. And that person comes with deep regret because their own children turned out a complete disaster. Perhaps some of them have even died due to making wrong decisions in life, wrong moral decisions. And that person looks at you with that little baby and recalls their own time when they had their little baby. And they recall the potential for self-destruction that was in that little heart, which in due season ripened and resulted in the tears, the sorrow that they have had to bear. It's a terrible time of regret. And it's all because we tend to think we are giving birth to little angels. It's closer to little demons. The potential for evil that lies in the fallen nature of each child that is born into this world. In fact, you see it pretty soon after they are born, from their failure to recognize that life does not revolve around them. Because the moment they want water, it doesn't matter what you're doing, you must provide water. The moment they want milk, it doesn't matter what you're doing, you must have milk. The moment their nappies are a little wet, they don't want to wait. So mothers just running around trying to keep these little things happy. They throw up tantrums, it's incredible. And so as they grow, the sins simply get more complex. But it's really the same heart. Then bear in mind the negative influence of the world that comes upon the child as the child grows. The world is a fallen world. And doesn't matter how much you might attempt to protect your children from these negative influences, the negative influences still find their way in. From the TV, from the internet, from the friends, from the older siblings, from relatives, and so on. You just cannot completely safeguard. Magazines, newspapers, all always pouring in a mindset that is altogether wrong. And then of course you have the sworn enemy of the devil himself, who is bent on destroying those young lives. I'm pretty sure if you are a parent long enough and you have children who've now reached perhaps their teenage years, every so often you ask yourself the question, who is equal to such a task? And yet, friends, that's the responsibility that we take upon ourselves when we become parents. It's a huge responsibility. And it is a task for which we must one day give an account to God. That is the reason why children don't fall from the sky. They come into the world through wombs, through parents. And God is saying, you are responsible for these lives, for nurturing them, for preparing them for adult life. And that is what you are to do through servant leadership. It is to serve in a leadership role, to guide, to shepherd these young lives so that one day they are ready to take on the world in such a way that it will be with great success. So I need to say this. Let's at least appreciate the principles and then run with them. The first thing I want us to notice is that in the passage we have read, the Apostle Paul does not begin by saying parents, but rather he says fathers. He doesn't say parents do not provoke your children, he says fathers do not provoke your children to anger. Now why is that? I think it's because of the fact that child upbringing has one very important role. And it is the role of a gracious, authoritative figure in a child's mind. And that's the reason why you will discover that where this is missing, there is a recipe for disaster. I'm pretty sure a number of you know this, that that's the nightmare of a single parent, and there I'm thinking more of a mother who raises children without a father figure. When they are preteens, it's easier. But when they hit their teenage years, it's a disaster for the women. They fail to control this rebellion which is there. Whereas when there is this dominant male figure in the home, all he needs to do is to cough and there's order. Because they know that, something tells them that there is an authority figure here. And you also therefore discover that often the teenagers know, going into early adulthood. So usually their most rebellious periods are when daddy is not home. That's when they start putting in their requests with mom. And when mom says no, they know that that no is not really no. So they push even further. Oh, my man. Come on, my man. Ah. And finally the mother, okay. They know they get away with things that they would not get away with if dad was here. And usually that kind of okay, because of course the mother is being irritated by these ongoing requests is what ends up spoiling those kids. This dominant and yet gracious authority figure that is represented by the term father is all important. One of the reasons why is because child upbringing has to do with preparing children for training children to live under the gracious yet authoritative rule of God Himself when they leave home. Because a day is going to come when you will not be hovering over them, but wherever they are going to be, they are still going to be under God. They will still be able to say, "Our Father who is in heaven." And consequently, they need to learn the meaning of that phrase, "through our Father who is in the home." And if they haven't learned what it means to abide under a father who is in the home, they will go out there and live in rebellion against a father who is in heaven. So it's crucial that we model, we symbolize before our children the God with whom they have to do. That there is a severity and there is also a graciousness. That there is such a thing as no, which means no. And there is also a yes, which really means yes. And a father figure sealed upon the child's conscience is vital for their well-being. And that's why the Apostle Paul singles out the father and says, "Fathers, here is an important role you are to play in providing leadership over these children. You are representing God, so please make sure you represent Him in everything." Now, there's a negative that the Apostle Paul uses here, which I need to quickly deal with. It's something that I've really emphasized. And it is when he says, "Do not provoke your children to anger." In other words, it's very easy for you as a parent to shoot yourself in the foot so that your role, your shepherding role, your leadership role, your molding role backfires on you so that your children stop listening to you. You anger them. You frustrate them. And when you do that, the next part which says, "But bring them up or train them in the discipline and instruction of the Lord," will not happen. And I have a few areas here, and there are approximately 7 of them. Let me quickly rush through them. First of all, and this is very important, I'll come back to it in a moment. Children are frustrated and exasperated when their stage of growth is not recognized. Let me give you an example. I think I heard it somewhere where somebody was saying, the way you correct a small child is not the way you correct a teenager or young adult. A small child making a mistake, you can rebuke them right there. Everybody else is listening. They don't have an ego to protect. They don't know what animal an ego is. They don't know the concept that a name can die. They don't know anything like that. So you can rebuke them right there. Everybody is listening and they take it. "Yes, yes, yes, I've done wrong, sorry," and so on. And maybe after that they turn to their friends and off they go to play. Well, a teenager, a young adult, one of the biggest things in their lives is their name. So if they've done something and just now sort of shouting at them and their friends are listening, well, you've killed them twice. You've not just punished them in terms of the rebuke that they need to process, but you've also punished them because it has happened in full display of their friends. And that you should only do when you deliberately want to do it. But not simply because you are angry and consequently you shout. So, the stages matter. Similarly, when it comes to corrective discipline, you can spank a small child because their sense of logic has not yet developed. But try spanking your 20-year-old son. He'll get it out of your hands and spank you instead. So again, you need to recognize the stages of growth. Secondly, it is when there's no sense of home in the home. In other words, there's just something about us as human beings that loves a place where you can let down your hair, take off your shoes, and just be yourself. This is home, sweet home. But if every time the person comes from the office or work or school or out there where all the enemies are, where they have to try and put on their best behavior, etc., to keep certain things in place and so on, and they come home and the same stress levels have to be maintained, before long a fuse blows. So, children should have a place where they can be themselves. If they are clumsy, there's at least one place they can be clumsy. Home. So, having a place like that. And I'm talking about biblical leadership here because we who are the father figures must recognize this. And consequently, when one of our children is constantly at the edge of the chair, we see it and we redress it before an explosion happens. The third is when they feel frustrated because only corrective discipline is used and no formative discipline. The point here is that the home is a school. It's an educational institution. So you must not only speak when they've done wrong. That's when you get into action. But rather, you must recognize that it's my role to train, to be regularly teaching, and in regular instruction, therefore, pouring my heart. And then, when they do wrong, to be able to say, now, what did we say last time? And what is this you have done? What does this mean in light of what I said last time? What therefore should be done when you do such a thing in view of what you've been taught? It should be like that. Formative discipline should be ahead of corrective discipline. Otherwise, you develop bitterness in children. I was speaking to the pastors the other day of a lady who once came to see me, and she was saying that her sons needed prayers for deliverance. So when I asked why, she said, the problem is all my sons are useless, she said. Only the daughters seem to be doing something worthwhile in life. Then she said, the problem began with the fathers, because my husband is also useless, together with his brothers. And she says, in fact, the problem started earlier because my father-in-law is useless. And on the story went. I then took her to the book of Proverbs, where Solomon says to his sons that, listen to my instruction, hold on to my teaching. And then he says, when I was a boy, an only child to my mother, my father taught me and said, hold on to my words, and so on. So there are three generations: David, Solomon, and now Solomon, his sons. And it's all about teaching, teaching, teaching. Hold on to this. It's the way of life. So I said to this lady that, you know, you probably do household chores with your daughters in the kitchen as you're cooking, you are there with your daughters, you are discussing how was the day, you know, what did your friend say now that you say this, and so on. And in that conversation, your daughters are sharing with you and you are instructing them. You're not even conscious that you are doing so, but as you are working together, you are talking, you are instructing, and she was going like this. Then I said, okay, which forum does your husband have with your sons? She burst out laughing. I said, no, the only time my husband is talking to my sons is when he's angry. In fact, he storms into their bedroom, gives them a piece of his mind, bangs the door, and goes right through the corridor, and the last words you hear him say is these dogs, you know, as he goes. And I said, there is the problem. It's the fact that formative discipline is missing. And so what happens is, they simply see his example, and his example is one of drinking and smoking, and they're thinking, wow, that's what it means to be a man. So as soon as I also feel I'm a man, that's what I'm going to do. And in the process, you are losing your sons. So the point I'm trying to make here is this, that by the time, therefore, the mother is now turning to the sons and saying, don't do this, don't do this, don't do this, it's too late. The example they've been seeing without the instruction from the father has been different. And all you do there is you exasperate them. You just make them angry. They rebel. The fourth one here is that your example as a parent contradicting your words. An obvious example I can use here is where you say to your children that you shouldn't tell lies. And then the person you owe money shows up at the gate and you say to your child, go and tell them I'm not here. Your example is contradicting your teaching to them. And I've heard people, when they are angry with their children about telling lies, instead of saying, you know, you told me a lie, that is wrong, you should stop it, they instead say, how can you tell a lie to me? Me, an adult, you are telling lies to me. As though to say, okay, you can tell lies downwards to young people, but you don't tell lies upwards to big people. So it's things like that. Here's the fifth one. It is when you're not providing for their needs. Education, clothing, food, shelter, etc. And especially when it is by your negligence. Because they can see it. It frustrates them to no end. They can see the way you live it. And they are being affected by it. I'm on Facebook at the moment. One morning I'm having my devotions and it shows up on my iPad and it's a statement by one of the young girls in my church and it just said something like, enough is enough, I've had it, full stop. That's all she said. So I quickly inboxed her and said, look, you are the one who decided to be my friend on Facebook. Obviously, you must be frustrated. Let's talk. And so she agreed and came over a few hours later. And in the process, what she was basically saying is that my father's failure to provide for us is getting into me. He's got a good job, but the problem is his money is being spent in wrong places. And she's at an age where she can see it. And consequently, it's eating away at her. And there was the exasperation. It just burst out on Facebook. So you can exasperate them that way. The sixth is when you cut across their sense of justice and fair play. Now, I'm sure a number of you may have come across this in life, where a little child, toddler, shouts in the home, something like this. Oh, it's not fair! But who taught this kid what fairness is? But you see, fairness is not something you learn in school. It's inbuilt in us. You can see, if children are sitting there, one gets the end of the wing, the other one gets a whole leg, plus even the thigh and everything on the plate. You know, the other one is thinking, it's not fair. And what is worse is when the one who got the end of the wing is your brother's or your sister's child whom you are now looking after. Then your own child is the one who now got almost half a chicken. So by the time you are now sending the one who is not your biological child to go and do this, there's no fairness here. There's no fairness. And so forth. And it all started from the dining room table. So the exasperation grows because of the sense of you are not being fair. And here's the last one that I'm giving here. And it is when you are too busy with other things to be with them and to listen to them. Now you'll understand this, generally speaking, from us as Africans, we tend not to think we should spend any time with children. Even the way we eat, there is the food for the husband, for him alone. Then everybody else with cabbage and shima. Now, unfortunately, what that does is that in that separation, you are just talking big talk there. And consequently, you are not there to listen to them. And often frustrations are not very big. They become big with time. They are small, which you can easily solve when they're still small in your children's lives. But if you are too busy and you are not there in a natural sense to hear them so that you can process them, you are losing out on opportunities. And in the process, the things become big. They share them with everybody else except you. They hear the wrong advice instead of hearing from you, and it's you who is the one who loses in the end. So a servant leader is somebody who seeks to avoid all these seven areas, because you recognize that it's your responsibility in the lives of these children. You need to serve them. You are bringing them from one end to the other. And consequently, you avoid exasperating them. Now, Paul doesn't simply end there. Paul proceeds to deal with the area of actual training. He says there, fathers, do not provoke your children to anger, or do not exasperate them, but rather bring them up in the discipline and instruction of the Lord. Train them this way, the Apostle Paul says. Now let me put it this way very quickly. And it's the fact that children, as I mentioned earlier, tend to go through various stages in their growth in life. And generally speaking, we have approximately 20 years plus minus 5 years or so to invest into the lives of our children. Usually by the mid-20s, their characters have been established, their direction in life has been established, they've chosen their career, they've chosen their spouse, maybe they've even gone out of our homes. Generally speaking. So this phrase of training, instructing, is not a one-day affair. It's a long haul. It's a marathon race. And in that marathon race, kids tend to go through different stages. There is the stage where they just copy anything and everything they hear. And some of you, I'm sure you've had that shock in life. Perhaps you call each other dear, and your child one day calls you dear or honey, and you get shocked, honey. But it's because that's the phrase that kid has been hearing you use. So if you call your wife a tomato, your child one day calls the mother a tomato. If you've got a maid in the home who uses insults when you're not there, that's how you discover that there are insults when I'm not here. Is that your child will just innocently insult you. And while you are kicking up tantrums about what is happening, the child looks surprised at your anger. What's your problem? This is the language that I'm picking up here. So a child goes through that phase, and it's important for you as a parent, when your child is going through that phase, to make sure that you put into your child's life all that initial building material that the child is going to need for the later stage in life. Then there is a second stage in life where your child's logic begins to kick in. Your child begins to want to understand their world. And again, those of you who are parents of kids that are preteens, as we call them, into the early teenage years, you will know that that's been one of your most frustrating periods in life because of the why question. And the kids are always asking why. You arrive home and you say to them, "Can you please take my shoes to the bedroom and bring my slippers?" And the kid goes, "Why?" And I remember I did that to my dad once upon a time. He asked me to do exactly that. And as I stopped playing and I went to pick up his shoes, I said, "Dad, why is it that you always send me but I never send you?" I was trying to understand my world, because there I was thinking, this man, each time he arrives, he says, "You do this, you do this." But me, I never do it to him. But I've never forgotten his answer. He said to me, "Are you sure you never send me?" I said, "No." He said, "Okay. When your school shoes finish, don't send me to go and buy you your next." I picked up his shoes quickly and rushed. So in other words, he helped me understand that we send each other, just that it's in different ways. So the point is, children then begin to go through that process. The same things they've already been seeing, now they are putting them into logical places. And sometimes as parents, we can easily get offended when they are simply wanting to understand their world. They'll say to you, "Daddy, mommy, as you tell us, boys, you must sleep in that bedroom. Girls, you sleep in that bedroom. But you two sleep in the same bed. Why?" Not that you shut up, come on, get out of here. They are trying to understand their world. At one time, they were just taking things for granted, taking them for granted. Now, the logic aspect has kicked in. And be patient with them. It's trying to make sense. If they are intelligent enough, for instance, with their mathematics, they'll say, "Daddy," or maybe it's at school, they're asking the teacher, "Why is it that 1 + 1 = 2? But 1 × 1 = 1. Why?" They had memorized it before. It was just mathematical table, additions table. But now, they are thinking. So you now must explain to them that addition means this and this. That's what addition means. So if you have one banana and you are given another banana, you have two bananas. That's what addition means. Multiplication talks about how many times something is. So, if you got one banana and you only have one banana for one time, how many bananas have you got? Obviously, it's only one. Okay. You know, so the logic is setting in. Now, again, it's an important time for you to recognize that your servanthood in the life of your child needs to change gears. If you are not a servant to your children, you know what you're going to do? They're just going to get very upset about these why questions. "You're now driving me mad with your why all the time. Go and ask your mother." But if you realize that this is the phase my child is going through now, as irritating as it might be, the child is trying to put logic to their world, you will bear with those questions.
why?
You will continue patiently, knowing it's a phase I need to answer. And as I often encourage parents, when the children reach this age, it's important for you especially to make use of the book of Proverbs, because the book of Proverbs helps children to put their logic into place, to recognize that life is not an accident. Life is about God. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. Logic falls into place when God is in place in your life. It's like trying to see our solar system by standing on the sun. Everything is logically going around. There's smooth symmetry. But when you are standing on your own little selfish earth, the thing is a bit confusing because you're not standing in the center. Life is like that. If you begin to see everything from the angle of God, then everything falls into place. Then there is the last stage. I use the phrase, it's when science gives way to art. I'll explain what I mean by that. You know, science, there's no modification with science. Gravity is gravity. You can't change it. It's gravity. That's science. But art is where you are adding something of your own character to it. Something of beauty to it. It's that extra that comes in because of your own personality. I've got two gadgets here that are recording. In terms of science, they both have the same thing for recording, because a microphone is a microphone. Whether it's made in China or America, it's a microphone. It has the same scientific properties. However, there's obviously some art involved here. Somebody decided he's going to beautify it in this way and that way and so on. And it's according to his own character as an artist. Now, that's exactly what happens to our children. When the logic phase is giving way to the final phase of a child's growth, there is something about that child that is now expressing itself. You cannot control it. Let me give two areas very quickly. The first is the choice of a career. One of the biggest mistakes that parents make is they wanted to be doctors and they ended up being carpenters. They've got a child. You must be a doctor. They even start early in life, you know, Dr. Mbewe. Hoping to drum it in. Now, look. Finally, that child will decide what he wants to be. You've taught him up to a certain level. Beyond that, it's now self-expression. This is what he wants to be. And consequently, you have to respect that. You may have had your dreams that your child is going to be the next president of Zambia, and he decides to become a missionary to Chinsali. That's him. Another area in which this expression comes in is clearly life partner. Your son will show up with a young lady and says he wants to marry her, and you sort of look and say, but, you know, are the women finished in this world? Okay, you won't say it, but you are thinking, is this the best that this guy can bring? Why? But your son is madly in love. He's upside down in love with this woman. Again, it's important for you as a parent to recognize that your children have entered that stage where God is preparing them for their autonomy in the world, for their own responsibility in the world, according to those parameters that he has put into them. He has wired them as unique individuals. There's nobody else in the whole planet from the beginning of history up to that point who's exactly like that little piece there. And your role is to come alongside them, like an elder brother figure now, like an elder sister figure, in order to provide the guidance so that in their choices, they are not making choices they will regret later on. And again, the Bible is full of material there because, for instance, it has a lot of biographical material where we see the end from the beginning. Because you see, the problem with the role models our children pick on, usually it's the music stars, the Hollywood stars, the football stars. These are the people they pick as, I want to be like him, I want to be like him, and so on. But the choices these people make, they can't see the final consequences. But in the Bible, we can see the end from the beginning. We can see the outcome of Moses' life, the outcome of David's life, the outcome of Joseph's life, the outcome of Paul's life, the outcome. We can see the end from the beginning. And it's important, brethren, when children are going through that phase, that you as a father figure in their lives take them through these real life characters so that they have models in life that are real. Models in life that they can emulate. Models in life that are going to help them have a good end, and not the kind of end they've been looking up to. So those are some of the issues I wanted to quickly process. But I think it's just important for us to recognize that we've got approximately 20 or so years where we besiege, lay siege on the lives of our children, and that we are slowly taking them through these phases graciously, but with authority, bringing them to the point where they are ready to go out into the world. One more point, and it is this: seek to lead your child to Christ and to Christian maturity as early as possible. It's not in your hands to bring a child to Christ, but you can definitely play your role. And to do so as you gradually release your child into the world. One day, that child will walk out of your home as a final product. And that's where you're going to see what your leadership was really like. In conclusion, two words. First of all, because you've got approximately 20 to 25 years, please don't panic when things seem to be going wrong. Don't scream your head off when there are some mistakes along the way. Because those mistakes are learning curves for you as a parent. They are also learning curves for your children. That's the first thing I want to say. There will be mistakes, both on your part and on the part of your children. But if you are a gracious, humble servant leader, you're still not going to be thinking so much about your ego, but about the child. And you say, let me make the most even of this for the training of this child. And the last is to be much in prayer. Because ultimately, the heart of a child is not in your hands. It's in the hands of God. So pray for your children, that as you train them, the Lord Himself will use what you are saying and doing to build those lives. Pray for them, even when they are rebellious. In fact, that's the best time to pray, because a lot is happening in the soul. There's tug of war, the emotions, the anger, the depression, the misery. All those things are going in. Just pray that God will take what you have been teaching to use, because at that point, there is heat that's melting a lot of things in the soul. Be much in prayer that God will truly use the what you've done to bring a child into the world, to live on his own in a way that will not bring shame to the Lord's name and to your own family name, but indeed will bring glory to God.
You've been listening to a sermon preached by Pastor Conrad Mbewe during the leadership conference session, which was held at Central Africa Baptist College. Central Africa Baptist College provides theological training as well as the skills required to study and proclaim the Word of God in the ministry. You are welcome to visit our course list at www.cabcollege.org.